Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So there are doping tests in football, not as many as you would like. There's no doubt that you can benefit from doing different types of doping, so it's not a question about whether they can have positive effects of that, and you consider the money that is there. So it is, would be strange if doping is not existing.
Med bara några dagar kvar till VM i Ryssland så känns det som att det mesta kring lagen har nagelfarits ner i minsta molekyl i VM-biblar, uppsnacksprogram och andra djupdykningar. Och när det gäller de kvalificerade 32 lagens uppladdningar är det minutiös planering som gäller för att kräma ut max av spelarna när det väl är avspark. Men det finns de som hävdar att fotbollen fortfarande har en bit att vandra innan man till fullo utnyttjar de tekniska och vetenskapliga kunskaper som finns om kroppens prestationsförmåga. En som har ett ben i bägge lägren är den före detta danske landslagsspelaren Jens Bangsbo, som har kombinerat rollen som professor i fysiologi vid Köpenhamns universitet med jobb som assisterande tränare i både danska landslaget och i Juventus. Jag kontaktade honom för att få reda på var de vita fläckarna på fotbollskartan finns vad det gäller möjligheten att påverka spelarnas fysiska prestation både på laglig och olaglig väg. Men vi börjar som vanligt med en faktaruta.
Age? 60.
Where do you live?
I live in Esbjerg, outside of Copenhagen.
Family?
Yes, I have family, wife and three children.
Education?
I'm educated in mathematics and sports physiology at the University of Copenhagen, and I have a doctorate degree in exercise physiology, and I'm presently a professor at the university.
But you also have a football education.
Yes, I'm a UEFA pro licensed coach and have been spending some time coaching full-time. I was in Juventus for 5 years, 3 years as assistant coach for Marcello Lippi, the winning later on the World Cup with Italy in 2006. And last year I was in Turkey together with Leonardo, the former coach of Milan and Inter, and sports director of Paris Saint-Germain. And he called me and asked me whether I want to join him for an adventure in Turkey. And we trained a Turkish team there. That has stopped because the president left the club and all the money disappeared at the same time. We had players like Eto'o, which you may know, and Nasri, former Manchester City, and a number of other good players. So it was an exciting time.
And what's your salary here at the...
too low for sure. And I think it's better to be a football coach, I can tell you.
Who is the best player in football's history, according to you?
This is a difficult question, as every journalist like to ask that question. Even they like to answer the question as well. We have had quite a lump of excellent football players, and I will mention the usual ones. Messi, of course, Ronaldo are great stars at the moment. Maradona, of course, was a big player. Pelé, I have seen, but this is so many years, so it's not easy to compare that. Myself, I spent a lot of time actually with Zinedine Zidane, who I believe is one of the major players in the history of football as well, and now even as a coach.
Which is your favorite team and why?
It is Juventus, and because I spent so much time with the team, and I still have a very close relationship to the people around and the players. It's good fun to come back to Juventus and see Gigi Buffon raising his arm 200 meters before you actually enter the field, and so saying welcome back, welcome home. So it's a family, and Juventus is definitely still my team.
If you look football-wise, what's the biggest you've kind of achieved?
Juventus or?
Career.
I don't think I achieved anything major, but it was a great experience to actually being part in creating the Juventus team, because when I arrived, they were fifth in the league, and we ended up playing the Champions League final 2 years later. So we created something special, I believe, in the group around the team. So I think that process, also because I came with another philosophy that I was allowed to introduce in Juventus, which was quite unique, as there's quite few founders in the coaching staff in Italy, actually. So it was great to be a part of that achievement, reaching the Champions League final, winning the Scudetto, the Italian league, which they hadn't done for a number of years. We won 2 years in a row then. So that was something special to me.
What has been the most exciting for you when it comes to football? If there's a special game that you won or something?
Being to the World Cup with the Danish national team, European Championship, these events are unique. These are things that you will remember forever. On an individual basis, I would say, is actually developing of players, seeing great players become even greater. We had at my time Pavel Nedved, who was a great player, but not top player. But he actually, in 2 years' time, became the greatest player in Europe, winning the Golden Ball. So seeing that developing, based on initiative we took in terms of looking at his strengths and how to develop those. Basically all the individual work, saying, okay, we can develop you even though you have reached a level, even though you have reached an age of 25, 26 years. Seeing that development was something special, I believe.
What was your best subject in school?
It was probably mathematics.
What makes you afraid?
Afraid is something happened with my children and family. This is the only thing I actually fear.
When were you really happy latest?
I'm often happy, and happy when you achieve something. It can be small things, big things. You are happy at the moment you are winning a semi-final in the Champions League against Real Madrid 3-1 at home, and you qualify for the final. This is a great moment, not because you're not alone with that feeling, because there are 65,000 people on the spectators that will support your feeling. So it's easy to get that feeling. So there's a lot of small things in the daily life that also makes me happy.
What's your most expensive stuff that you bought?
This is the Swedish car, of course. I bought a Volvo car, and you know they are quite expensive. Also in Denmark, or even more in Denmark.
Meeting you, you're an interesting combination of a former player, played in the top league of Denmark, and also for the national team a couple of games, but you're also educated as a coach and also a professor in physiology and mathematics. How come you ended up working so much with football?
Football I have been interested in since I was five, starting my first steps in the football club, and always been fascinating with the team sport, being together with very people from very different type of social classes and so, and having that interaction, you have the common language of football, which have always interested me. And that's also why I started studying the sports physiology, understanding further what was going on. So it has been a natural step to be involved in football also after I finished my career as a football player. I was actually an instructor when I was a football player. When I was 24, I was instructor for the Danish Football Federation. So I had my coach, he was an instructor as well, so we met on these occasions actually to deliver courses together, but also having a common discussion about how to develop football in Denmark. So I have always been involved in football, independent on my work at the university.
My feeling, it might not be right, but is that football not always mixes with science, not that well. It seems that it's two different worlds. They don't really always listen to science. What's your view?
Oh, you may be right, but I think it's not necessarily the problem of football or the people in football. It's more a question about ability to actually speak the same language, because there's a lot of science you cannot directly apply in a football setting, even though it may seem logical. You need to introduce that. You need to apply that in a way where it works in football. And there I do have the advantages, I must say, at least a claim I have, that I have the insight in football. I'm now responsible for the education, the physical education in the Asian Football Federation. That means all the countries in Asia. And there I say, for the people going into the fitness instructors, fitness coaches, these people do need to have a football education as well. We don't want to have people from athletic coming in and actually tell what the football coaches are supposed to do. We wanted to educate them in football, to have an understanding of football before you apply all these theories or ideas in football. So it is not the problem of soccer necessarily. It could be, because many coaches are quite conservative, but it is also a question about the people in science that may not be able actually to apply the information they have in a practical session. And we do see that in the Premier League, for example, every club has a scientific department, head of performance, they usually call that. But these people are not talking to a great extent with the head coach and have that influence on the training, as they could have if they actually were able to translate that information into practice.
Is that because they don't speak the same language in a way?
Yeah, you may say so, and it's a tough one to convince the coach that you have something to offer, because the coach has a long experience, and if you have the top clubs in Premier League, many of these coaches have been coaching for many years, except for the coaches that just have been playing, and then they have enough to do just to coach the team, have no idea what they're supposed to do. I remember Southgate, I met him for a course.
Gareth Southgate, coach for England going to the World Cup.
Yeah, and I met him and he said, I was the coach of Middlesbrough. I have no idea, no clue of what I was supposed to do. So such a guy would have difficulties also to then adapt the scientific knowledge and so on. Now he's the head coach of the English national team, but just to say, this is not so easy just to have that connection. And I must say, I was quite impressed, because I was in Juventus and I was there primarily when I came as a consultant for the physical part. And they had three physical coaches. We were discussing how they were supposed to do. And at a point I said, we cannot just discuss this. We need to look at the tactical, technical aspect as well. And then they say, it's not us. Then you have to talk with the head coach. And then I talked with the head coach, and that was Carlo Ancelotti at that time. And after that, we established a very close relationship, because he had a belief that I had something to offer. But that shows that there are coaches understanding that there may be some benefit of listening to people from the scientific world.
You've been a player yourself, and how has football changed looking into things, how you eat, how you sleep, how has football changed the last 30 years?
No, but that has changed a lot. And it's also seen on the field. If you look at the Premier League, if you compare data from the mid-2000s to now, nowadays there has increased high-intensity work by 40%, sprinting, 100% increase in the distance in sprinting. So there have been a lot of changes in football and demands in the game, but there has also been a lot of changes in the behavior of the football player. There has been a greater understanding of actually living a professional life. You may say 15, 20 years ago, some of the players were not professional. I didn't see that actually in Juventus because I think that was a special situation. But these things have changed. And Wenger is one good example of you can introduce these things and be successful with that, as he did in 2004, 5, whatever, when he started at Arsenal. And these things have been changed. And the players are asking now also, requiring more, and that's what should be the future. We need to develop players that are actually asking for these. I mentioned the individual analysis, but also individual training. And I'm not sure players have reached that level yet, but that should be the future. You have to ask for your personal development, not only to develop yourself, but also in order to see that in relation to the team perspective.
If you look at the football in the Nordic countries, I mean, we have less resources, even if FC Copenhagen has a lot of resources. It's small resources compared to Premier League clubs. How do you think this approach is working in the Nordic countries, Sweden, Denmark? Do they take this seriously?
I do think they do. But I also think they fool themselves. Because every time we talk about these things, people are talking about money. So forget about money. You can do these things because it doesn't cost much. You may not be able to buy the same type of players as they do in the Premier League or in the Spanish League, but you can develop your players in the same methods as we are doing with the great players. So it's often an excuse. We start saying this is not our tradition, this is not what we have resources for. But forget about that. These are just excuses. We can reach a higher level, I believe, in Scandinavia by having a more strict approach.
Why isn't that happening?
It is happening, I'm sure. I don't follow it enough to actually say it's not happening. But I think there is this tradition, and it starts actually with the management. It's not just a question about a coach. It starts with the management. They have to set the level they want to reach. And they may not be able to do that because they don't have the capacity or may not select the right people actually to structure their sporting development. But they have to raise the bar and then say, okay, to reach this point, we need to have a coach that do this and this. And then they start appointing the coach. Nowadays, they just take the coaches, as they do in many other countries. Italy, they take the same coaches and they are turning them around. But finding a coach that actually can achieve, have a reasonable chance to achieve the goal you are setting. So I think the future is you have to have a management around the club and a structure and ideas that are more ambitious than we see at the moment. Everybody wants to be in the top three, but nobody tells actually the people around how to reach that top three.
When you say that it's not about the money, they can use the same methods. What is the most important part of those methods that they could use?
Basically, it's a structured way of working with the team. That can be tactical development, that can be individual technical development, individual development generally. All that things need to be in place. But after that, they need to make sure that the mental aspect is in place. That means that in our group, we are doing things this way. And this is what we have to respect. You see the big teams, they know what to do. Real Madrid is an excellent example of that. They face all the problems in the tournament. They face the problems in the game. They are lucky actually sometimes to survive that. And why are they lucky? Because they have created that. They have a group that knows what they want to do and how to do these things. It's not necessarily the coach. It may be, and this is what you have to develop, the players on the field that know how to handle those difficulties you always will face. And this is a very, very important aspect of a head coach to understand how do I create that? What's the base when I come? And how can I develop based on that? And sometimes you should never come because the base is not there. So you forget about try to develop that at that club maybe. So I believe having that clear approach saying I want to develop that which require this and this. And sometimes you require that you actually take two of the best players away from the team because they cannot fit into the culture you try to create.
You worked with the Danish national team also. What was your role?
Yeah, I was an assistant coach and basically I was responsible for the physical part, but I have always been involved in all parts of the football, and this was a very good thing about the head coach Morten Olsen, because he wanted to interact with everybody around the team. So we spent a lot of time discussing all aspects related to that, like coming back from a game in a pre-game before the World Cup in South Africa. We are 26 players in the group. We have to select 23. That means three players have to leave the squad the next morning. We are coming home at 1 o'clock in the morning, and he says, guys, it's time now to discuss this. So we spent 5 hours discussing which three guys were not supposed to join in South Africa. Everybody was involved, and we discussed that 5 hours. At the end of the day, at the next morning at 9 o'clock, the three players were called. We talked with them, we explained them why we had made that decision. So, but he had an incredible ability actually to involve people. So it was also the tactical aspect. Everybody knew he was going to make the final decision, and it is the way it has to be. But that involvement made me very happy by working with the national team.
Being responsible for the physical part, how important is it? I know the last Swedish coach, he worked a lot with what they ate, and he took tests, the fat percentage and things like that. He even dropped the player because he said he had too high fat percentage. Yeah. Is that the right way to work?
That's part of it. We just have to be careful not doing things to be too eager on the details. Fine, nutrition need to be in place. Sometimes you can even accept that this is not optimal, because it's basically at the end of the day, it's performance of the player that counts. And when does he or she perform is at the moment where he feels the best prepared, feeling as part of the group, understand the tactical aspect and so on. Spend the time on that, make sure this is okay. Then you work on the details as well. But it doesn't have to be an issue. So you have to work on that 2 years before you actually come to a final. It's not to do something specific for that final, because that should just be part of the normal routine. And why is it part of the routine? It's because this guy actually had benefited from that, and therefore he had introduced that in his own life at home. What we did with the Danish national team before the World Cup, European Championship, was that we asked the players to report all their activities for half a year before they came. And you may say it's part of control to understand what they were doing. Sometimes they were not dependent on themselves because it was the club that organized things. But it allowed us to have a contact with them and discussing issues during that period. And that's a way to work, I believe, from a national coach. It's not just the event. It is the entire period between the events and when you're not with the national team. And I remember we had special session with some of the guys because they may not have been playing on the Sunday and the group was together. And I make specific sessions with the players and the attacker doing different type of activities. And then at the end of the activity, he said, can't we do the same tomorrow? I said, no, tomorrow we're doing something with the team and we can repeat this later on, but not tomorrow. So I asked him, why don't you do this at home? And say, oh yeah, maybe I could. So why don't you ask your assistant coach whether he could do some of these activities with you? Oh yes, that may be an issue. And coming back to the players, actually should require more in the clubs than they do. And I think working with a national team is not just when the team is together, it's also a lot about what can you do when you don't have the team, because you don't physically, you cannot develop in 10 days for two games. You are playing not much. You can do a little bit, but not much. Before a World Cup or a final, you can do a lot more. But still, the basic has to be done before they arrive in the training camp.
How much help do you have today when there's, I mean, the technology has made it easier to have contact and get the test results and things like that? How has that developed your type of work?
It has for sure. You have a lot of possibilities nowadays, and you see every team seeing training, and even in matches they use GPS and so on, and you have a lot of information from that. You have heart rate measurements, you have perceived exertion, they explain themselves how they feel. You can do very simple tests in order to understand what's the actual recovery level of a player, or how much training can he do. So there's a lot of possibilities. The challenge now is actually to optimize the use of this. I've been in Manchester United a number of times. I'm seeing these three guys from university spending all day working on the data from a training session. But which data are important? And how is that going to influence the training the day after and the day after that is the issue. And I'm not sure they have reached it. There was at the time of Ferguson, and he did really well, but it's still a lot to be learned how to optimize that information. And we are working with a company now to try to organize that in a better way where people actually will get some answers rather than questions. Which can help them in the daily training planning, because it's a busy day for a manager, not only being on the field to do the training, but also having a check on all the other things that happen around the team.
You've also worked with players on their own, or is that that's something I read? I'm not sure.
Not specifically. I had a tournée with Nike where, and it was a good experience. Went with some of the top players: Tevez, Fabregas, Ronaldinho, Pato. These guys, 10-15 of these guys, and I had 2 hours with them. And I made 4 exercises for them. I said, "Your special competence is speed. Your special competence, Tevez, is coordination." And then we had specific exercises for them. So that's the only thing I've been working with. But the most exciting things about that was not the exercises. It was the response from the guys. So coming a stranger, a Dane, even a Scandinavian, coming and telling them for 2 hours what they have to do. Why? Why should I? They did it because they actually somehow believed that that could be interesting, believing also maybe it could benefit them. So they were responding very, very positive to that. So this is the only thing I've done individual basis, except for the Danish national team, where I have given programs to players in the preparation for even for their tournament, not only for their for the finals, but also afterwards they asked me to make a special preparation programs for them.
You've also invented the yo-yo test, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
What's the key with that?
The key is it's simple. You can test 30 players in 15 minutes and you get a very good picture of their ability to recover. I told about the importance in football is the ability to do high intensity work. Everybody can do that for once or twice, but can you repeatedly do that in the game, which may be crucial for the outcome? If Cristiano Ronaldo is finished after 40 minutes, he cannot run anymore, he has a problem. He doesn't have that problem. But you can test that in the test. We see it's correlated well to the high-intensity work in the game. You can not have a test that exactly expresses how they perform. Never. But at least this is a very, very simple tool to obtain information on the actual performance. And if you do that on a frequent basis, you will understand how they develop. Many players are actually decreasing their performance during the season. And if you do the test, you may see which players are not performing. You may have an injured players, you try to do the test again to understand what is his level actually, where is he back in terms of being able to perform again.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Som de flesta känner till så finns det gott om genvägar att ta när det kommer till att höja idrottars fysiska prestationer. Dopingdebattens vågor har gått höga de senaste åren. Framförallt efter McLaren-rapportens avslöjande om en omfattande statsunderstöd och systematisk doping som ryska förbund gjort sig skyldig till. Men vad det gäller sporten fotboll så har de här frågorna svårt att få plats på agendan. Systematiska tester görs egentligen bara i samband med mästerskap. Och känslan är att det är skygglappar på hos såväl de nationella förbunden som hos FIFA och UEFA. Men hur ser verkligheten ut? Och hur mycket har fotbollsspelare att tjäna på att dopa sig?
I saw a report about, because was it FIFA that said that they had 30,000 tests that had 60 positive cases, and I'm not sure what the numbers are. So there are doping tests in football, not as many as you would like, because all of us would like to have a sport that is without doping. You may ask, why do we do not have more? It's not just a question about the test. I believe there still is a culture. You may think I'm naive, but there is a culture where it is not regarded as a normal thing to do. I may say that. And I never seen that ever in my life in football, any indication of doping. And I may not be at the right places at the right moment, but anyway, I don't think that the culture is there. There's no doubt that you can benefit from doing different types of doping. So it's not a question about whether they can have positive effects of that. And you consider the money that is there. So would be strange if doping is not existing. But I would say at my time at Juventus, we had two players every game from our team, two for the opponent, that were tested. So it was difficult for them at least to manage how they were going to dope themselves in the tournament, because at least they tested 10 times in a season. And so that was quite restrictive, I would say, in Italy, at least in my time. So I think it's more culture issue. And I've never had anybody asking me if any advice in relation to that either. And they may believe that I understand what would be beneficial to do. So somehow, I don't think it is developed to a great extent. It can be systematic in Russia. We've seen that for the other sports, so why not football? It's difficult to believe that should not be part of that. But I'm talking about club bases here. I'm talking about national teams. Every national team before the World Cup, all the players are actually tested now.
When we meet the day before, the Swedish squad, they had FIFA, they took blood tests and urine. Yeah. What could they discover from those tests?
They can discuss some of the general things you will look for in terms of doping, and some of these are anabolic steroids, it's growth hormone, it is EPO, that will also actually benefit football players. It's not only for cyclists, EPO. And some of these things, there are also the beta-2 agonists that some players actually are allowed to take because of the asthma.
But one player that I talked to, he plays in France, and he said he played there for 2 years. He hasn't had a doping test for 2 years in France. If you consider that there is not that many doping tests, is it possible that you could prepare yourself during like a winter and then stop taking, and you wouldn't be discovered in this test a couple of weeks before the World Cup?
Yeah, you could do that. But the winter and World Cup is a longer period, that's 5 months or whatever, or 3 months. But anyway, yes, you can do that. And in football, we don't have whereabouts, which they do have in other sports, where they actually have to tell where they are so they can make visits, unpleasant visits maybe. No, but this is an issue. We need to increase the number of doping tests in football for sure. And
why do you think UEFA and FIFA, they don't want to do whereabouts, which is where you report where you are? They don't want that.
Yeah, why do France not do more doping tests and so on? You have to ask them.
Why do you think? You've been in the industry for a long time. Why do you think?
No, the obvious question is that it may not be that's good for the sport if you actually have a huge number of recordings. I think the International Cycling Organization are struggling a bit, and they still are, even though they claimed at a point that they could control this, which is apparently not the case. They don't want to be a new cycling association, I believe, and I still think people have that in mind when they try to restrict the number of tests, and they may claim economy and all that issues. That's bullshit, because the economy is in football, and you should do more in the favor of the sport, of course.
If you look at the, if you're a player, how can you become better through doping if you're a football player? Some people I talk to say that, oh, it's not used in football that much because you can't benefit that much. How would you say that you can benefit?
First, we say football is a more complex sport than cycling or running and so on. So it's not obvious that even though you are doping yourself or take doping, that you benefit from that. You perform better at the end of the day. You have to kick the ball in the right direction. But there are a number of issues where you can build up your muscle mass, your steroids, can use that in the winter time or in the pre-season where you do your power training, and you will significantly benefit from that, that's for sure. The EPO has a short-term effect, so that's while the tournament is going on, or so you try to take that a few days before you actually are competing, or and which is a bit difficult when you have that many competitions or many games. As such, growth hormone will also increase your ability to perform. We have the beta-2 agonist that also has significant effect on the muscle strength, the muscle development and so on. So there are a number of compounds that definitely will increase your ability.
How can you, if you watch a player, you say you haven't seen any doping, but if you watch a player, could you see that he's suspected, he grew so much muscle under a short time or something? Could you suspect that he's taking something?
Yeah, you could. And there are examples, which I'm not going to mention, but there are examples where you see people changing from one club to the other. Where they in a reasonable short time have gained a lot of muscle mass, which can be, of course, because they're doing the power training, which they are, but can they actually gain that much in such short a period? That you may question sometimes.
How many players would you think in Russia are taking or have taken something illegal?
That's impossible to try to answer that. And first we said that I have never seen that, so why should any of them have taken anything? I don't know if they have. I have no idea to what extent that may have happened. You may say some have been desperate in actually being selected for the team. It may not even be to to prepare for the tournament, but actually preparing for being selected, because this is such a great issue for any football player to be present at the World Cup, which I said previously is a unique experience.
In a way, it's surprising that you started to work for Juventus, because they have had a lot of rumors and there were accusations, even a process in the courts in Italy, even though I think in the end Juventus won. At least they weren't, there wasn't prison, or maybe prison for the doctor.
No, there was, as far as I know the case, they were accused for doping. There was no indication of they actually did doping. There was, I think there may have been a judgment of the doctor being not responsible, sufficiently responsible for delivering medicine to the players, which was not doping, but you have to say, when I came to Juventus, it was a small apothèque, whatever. Is it pharmacy? What is pharmacy?
Apothèque, på svenska. Pharmacy. It was a small pharmacy in Juventus.
Yes, and that was what they had been used to. But it was not only for the players, it was the family of the players. It was for the board members' families and everything. They have to support everybody in the whole environment of Juventus. So they had a lot of stuff. And maybe they gave people stuff, the players stuff, that it was not clarified as. It was not doping, but it was clarified the way that they subscribed that was not the way you usually did as a medical doctor. I believe it's something related to that. There was no player that ever was accused, that may be accused, but never judged for taking doping. So the first thing we did actually was discussing what are needed of these. Should they have some vitamins? Should they have something, other supplements that may help them in terms of proteins and other stuff of that? So we took all the other stuff away and tried to have a common sense delivery of these substances for the players.
Weren't you worried about, I mean, your reputation going into a club that just before had been embroiled in this scandal?
No, I was not concerned because I believe the people I was talking with and before I actually signed a contract with them were decent people and understood what was needed in order to achieve those developing we were discussing. So, and there was not that issue. That was not an issue, we said, because they were open-minded in terms of reducing all this stuff. It was not saying that, yeah, you can come here, but we will do all our own stuff anyway. We actually discussed that, and they, because of the court, the things that were running, they were interested as well to get to a point where they could not be accused again. So I wasn't worried.
Where in sports you kind of push the limits? Where's the limit? I mean, in Norway there's been the skiers with the asthma spray, and where do you think the limit is where you shouldn't pass? For what you can do, which, I mean, there are athletes taking medicine that are for sick people, and they do it to perform better.
Yeah, and this is a very difficult issue, I believe, we have in sport, that people are competing not on the same conditions. So you may say the guy, and there are quite a lot of those in skiing and other and cycling and so on, that have asthma. The question is that the level they have to compete on and suffering for the asthma where they cannot compete under certain conditions? Or should we try to help them compete? Then we try to help them to compete by giving them asthma medicine and then giving them an advantage. Then other people say, why do they have that advantage? Maybe I have asthma as well, or I could have. So I want to have the same medicine as the other guys. And there we have a very difficult issue. How are we going to control that? Are we going to handle that? I could be in favor of saying, don't take anything then. And then if you have asthma, you may not compete in this sport. And then we may take half of the top athletes in skiing out of that.
Or they all have asthma.
They all have asthma. Some do not have, and they will suddenly be the gold medal winners. So it is very difficult issue, and it is so that at the Olympics there is a significant higher number of people with winning medals with asthma than not asthma. That means that there is, and we know that, a beneficial effect of taking the asthma medicine. Should that be allowed or not? Basically, I would say not, because it's better than we know what we are doing. Now we force people, healthy people, so to take medicine in order to be able to compete with the other sick people that need the medicine. Interesting issue.
Going into the World Cup, then we don't know that we won't get the same. We won't see that the World Cup winners have a higher propensity of some kind of illness, something, because they don't test. Do you have any hope that the football would change and allow more tests?
Yeah, for sure. The test will never solve the problem. Never solve the problem, but at least it will make people giving a second thought at the moment where they try to cheat. And we don't want people to cheat in football or in sport in general. So more testing for sure, and why not? The money is there, the people are there, we have to get going in terms of that. To what extent we can control it, I don't think we can be very optimistic in any sport. We have the cycling, they still face the same problems they had many years ago. It's not done yet. And this is a constant discussion that needs to be taken on. And I'm not sure we ever reach a point where we believe that we have a so-called fair sport, which you may even discuss where it is when you start talking about video analysis or whatever you do, make decisions. But it is part of the sport as well. We would like to avoid that part, but we will never be able to do that.
And since you're a football coach also, how will Sweden and Denmark do in the World Cup?
They will do very well, both qualify after the groups, because they know how to prepare, they know how to compete, and they have unique groups that are able to actually understand at the moment they're on the field how to support each other to create good results. So we will have both Denmark and Sweden for the eighth final.
Okay. Will they advance further? Sweden will probably play Brazil then.
Brazil is to be beat. Ask Germany. You can always beat Brazil in a World Cup, even in Brazil. Don't think about the matches, who you're going to play. Make sure you make well in the group play, and things can happen after that.
Who do you think will win in the end?
I believe Germany can do that again. Their preparation, their many years of developing their team, understanding that it can put new players in the team without having a significant effect on the performance or maybe even increase the performance. I believe that aspect is essential. And knowing that in such a long tournament as a World Cup, I believe Germany can do that again. But everything can happen in football.
Even though science is there to help.
Science can make your chance of being successful even greater.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Låt oss att se om vi får några dopningsfall under det kommande VM i Ryssland. Men efter pratstunden med Jens och Bangsbo har man känslan av att fotbollen har en lång väg att vandra innan man är på nivå med andra idrotter vad det gäller kampen mot doping. När den här podden släpps sitter jag på ett flyg till Ryssland där jag ska punktmarkera det svenska landslaget under VM för TV4 och fotbollskanalens räkning. Vi hoppas även kunna göra ett par avsnitt till innan podden tar sommarledighet. Bland annat blir det med landslagets materialare Roger Jakobsson inför VM-premiären mot Sydkorea. Vi hörs igen nästa vecka.
Hold up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.